The Lubbock Police Department increased their presence in an East Lubbock neighborhood following an uptick in gun violence earlier this year. And data shows it's working. While older residents welcome the added police presence, younger members feel it's bordering on harassment. Today, we're looking at the complicated relationship between police and the mostly minority East Lubbock community, a relationship that has historical roots, and how LPD is working to gain trust there. This is Listen in Lubbock. You're listening to Listen in Lubbock. I'm your host, Casey Ellingson. Today, I'm joined by KLBK's newest evening anchor, Matt Stell. Later on, historian Andy Wilkinson is going to unpack the events surrounding a school shooting at Dunbar High School in 1971 that resulted in an evening of unrest in the area. But first, this summer, Lubbock Police Department's first of three substations will open in East Lubbock, a move that'll help to decentralize the police force. Matt, before you sat down at the anchor desk, you had reported on the development of this substation. Can you give us a rundown of what the plans are there?
Yeah, and Casey, thank you so much for allowing me to be on with you. It's such a privilege to be over here at KTTZ. The substation plan, or as Lubbock Police like to describe it, as their patrol division stations, it's a plan that they've been working on for years. They've wanted to decentralize the police department. It's something that they just felt like is the best decision. It'll work for this town. They definitely refer to places like Arlington, Texas, which is, you know, one of the biggest suburbs of the Dallas area, has well over 300,000 people, similar to Lubbock, not as large when it comes to geographical size, but population-wise, about the same. And they have a decentralized police force as well. And the police there say it works. And, you know, that model is the same model that Lubbock Police are wanting to take on. And use here in Lubbock. So kind of give you, just like you said, on the plans, there'll be three substations or patrol division stations, whatever your preference is. The first one will open up in East Lubbock in July of this year. There'll be another one in South Lubbock, and there will be a third one in North Lubbock. And so the first one will open in July, and they're going to stagger them by a few months, so they'll actually have that third one in North Lubbock hopefully open by the end of the year, 2021. Okay. And so that's the plan. And they really want, Lubbock Police really want these substations, patrol division stations, to be places to where they can engage and interact with the community.
Nice. So when people throw around the term community policing, is that kind of what they're talking about?
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, and that's something Lubbock Police Chief Floyd Mitchell has always said, community policing. We want, they want the people who live in those communities to see and know the officers, the law enforcement in their community, so that it's just not a new face every time they're called out to something. Or if you need something, it's not a new face. It's, you want to see somebody who is, you're familiar with, and somebody who has established relationships with that community as well. And so we've heard a lot about community policing, especially these past 4 or 5 years of doing that. Everybody's not on board with it, but it seems like a lot of police departments across the country are thinking that this could solve some of the problems and issues that we're seeing now.
I see. And in Lubbock, do you know what the catalyst for this change was?
A lot of it was that in East Lubbock, and from, this is just, you know, from personal experience and people I've talked to, they say, you know, we'll kind of get into this topic a little bit later, of course, with over policing as well. But it's, you know, you've got LPD, and LPD has to serve a lot of different groups of people. You've got South Lubbock, you've got West Lubbock, you've got Tech, you've got East Lubbock, you've got North Lubbock. And all those different areas of town require different types of policing. And so we live in such a great city like Lubbock, where you have all those different facets and groups of people and life here, all here in the 806 area code. And so I think that was kind of the catalyst of it. You've got so many populations to serve, and community policing could be one of the best ways to serve people in that way.
I see. Now, there was an interesting community meeting that I went to that took place a few weeks ago at the Patterson Library in East Lubbock, where community members from East Lubbock got to talk with people from the city working in the area. There was the new neighborhood planner who was recently hired by the city, the person in charge of coding enforcement, as well as police officers who are patrolling the area. The police officers started their portion by talking about the spike in gun violence that they saw back in February. So in response, they started heavily policing that neighborhood. What have you heard about this?
Yeah, most definitely, Casey. Chief White in that meeting, and also Assistant Chief Neil Barron talked about the numbers, and I kind of wrote some of those down about, especially in the corridor that's from Avenue Q down to Parkway, so north and northeast Lubbock. They had saw such an uptick in crime, or as they call, you know, gun crimes, gun violence in that area. There was a weekend to where they, in a 24-hour span, they saw 8 gun crimes, shootings, basically, within a 24-hour span. And that right there, you know, that was a problem. It is a problem. We can all agree. 8 shootings within that corridor is a lot. Something that Chief Barron also brought up, he said, from January 1st to March 14th, in that same corridor, Avenue Q to the Parkway, 42 incidents of gun violence. And at that point, they decided they wanted to establish more of a presence in the area. And as they also say, Lubbock Police, I mean, it's their job to keep people safe. And seeing these numbers, you know, as they say, the numbers don't lie. The facts don't lie.
Yeah.
You've seen an uptick in gun crimes. They've got to step in and do something. That's what their perspective was.
Yeah, absolutely. And when they say gun violence, they defined it as an incident involving a gun. So not necessarily always a shooting or
right.
someone getting injured,
exactly.
but a gun was involved. As you mentioned, Assistant Chief Neil Barron gave a PowerPoint presentation that clearly laid out that data that they're tracking and the data that they're basing their actions on. I want to play a portion of that meeting from Officer Barron.
From March 14th until April 4th, we were able to reduce the number of gun violence instances from 42 to 4. And that's not just in the Parkway area. That's citywide.
So the actions they're taking seem to be working based on these numbers.
Yeah, that's exactly right. What Assistant Chief Barron was saying was that it's working.
Mm-hmm.
When you have increased enforcement, targeted enforcement as well, the numbers once again showed when you did that, it worked.
While we're talking about increasing police presence in a largely minority community, there's a pretty big elephant in the room here, even if these tactics are working. This is happening while across the country we're seeing Black men and women killed by police frequently. And while Lubbock hasn't seen a similar situation play out, that tension did come up at this meeting. We'll dive into that after the break. Welcome back to Listen in Lubbock. I'm Casey Ellingson, and I'm in the studio with Matt Stell, the evening anchor at KLBK. Matt, before the break, we were talking about the meeting that was held in East Lubbock between residents and members of the city, including police officers. Those officers opened the discussion with an explanation of why they've upped police presence in the Parkway neighborhood, and that from the information they're collecting on it, it's been effective. Before we move on, I think it's important to note that this meeting was really well attended. Every seat in the room was taken. People were standing in the back and outside the room, and there was a wide range of people of all ages present. So I shared the audio from that meeting with you. Can you describe some of the initial responses that you heard after the police officers gave their presentation?
I mean, long story short, Casey, the people, they were opinionated. They came, they knew what they wanted to say. Who got one of the first women who got up and spoke. She says she's lived in Parkway for quite some time. She has a bachelor's degree in criminal justice, a master's degree in alternate conflict resolution. So she says this is her expertise. This is her field. And she says that she also worked with the Texas Department of Criminal Justice and, of course, with corrections. And she says in some conversations she had with officers and corrections officers that a lot of them were bothered with the term defund the police. And you know, and she said that she didn't want to get too into what they, you know, too much into what they said, but she said what they followed with were some very insensitive comments. And to her, hearing that from people who work in law enforcement, I mean, it was very concerning to her. Another woman who got up, she was 93 years old. And we both talked about this. She gets up and says, you know, I'm probably the oldest woman in the room, but I'm here and I want to say something. She says that she's thankful for the police. She's mm-hmm. glad they're in East Lubbock. She's glad they're in the community. She talks about how she's especially glad that they're coming and checking on the elderly. They're knocking on their doors, saying, hello, how are you? Everything going? You need anything? Mm-hmm. And that they have a 24/7 presence. We also heard from Miss Sandra Chatham at the beginning of the meeting.
Yeah.
And she made her opinions well known as well, that she's glad the police are there. Mm-hmm. She is glad that, once again, checking on the elderly population. I mean, her words were, we want the police over here. Something she mentioned that really stuck out to me. She says sometimes on the weekends, with this increased enforcement, she says, quote, it sounds like Vietnam over the weekends. And you know, and a lot of people might say, well, what do you mean, Ms. Chatham? She says that you can hear helicopters whirling in the air. You can hear police sirens going all around. And she says, yeah, I mean, that she doesn't like to hear that all the time because, you know, something is not going on well. Mm-hmm. But she says, hey, you know, if they're doing their job, they're doing their job. You know, and it kind of, as we talked about, there was a little bit of a disconnect.
Yes.
As well. I know we'll get into that in a moment. But we heard from especially some Black women who say, we are glad that the police are over here.
Mm-hmm.
We're glad that you've got this increased enforcement as well. And it seems like that disconnect is generational.
Mm-hmm.
Of you've got folks who have lived in East Lubbock for years, may have lived there their entire lives, saying thank you for finally taking some time out and being over here.
Yeah.
Being present because we need you. The crime numbers are getting high. We need you over here.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And one of the moments that kind of stood out to me was when Jafar Abdullah stood up and spoke. I actually have that audio from that moment. And just note that I've edited it down for time. Let's take a moment to listen to that.
Right. And so there were some words that were said, such as full-time police presence, focused enforcement, specific targets. To me, it sounds like stop and frisk. Are there any non-traditional methods that we can try? I hear our elders, man, but me coming up in this community, I don't want my community over-policed. And I speak on not just on me and my family, but also the 20 young men that were scared to come to a library in their own community.
So this is an all-around interesting dynamic that really popped up. On the one hand, you've got the older members of the community, like you had mentioned, who are grateful for this increased police presence, asking them to stay, asking them to check on them. And then on the other hand, you've got the younger people who are afraid. And I mean, before this moment, before Jafar stood up and said this, he mentioned that he asked 20 or so young men that he mentors to come to this meeting, and none of them did because they were afraid.
Wow. Yeah, that right there, as you say, Casey, that shifted everything right there.
Yeah.
He says, I told them to come. They're afraid to come to a meeting within their own community. They're scared. That's what he says. These young men are scared to show up to the Patterson Library.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a part of that disconnect. And Jafar says, they're scared to come. Our men are dying. They're afraid of being stopped. He also mentioned that, you know, a lot of young men, if they see the police, they're going to go the other way. They're not going to stop. They're not going to get out their car and say, hello, how are you doing? They, for whatever reason.
Yeah.
They do not want to interact with police, even at a community meeting. And it was at that point, Casey, to where we started to see, you know, a little more tension in the room that night. And once again, Assistant Chief Nathan White was saying, you know, I'm glad we're having these conversations. I really am. And it's okay. We don't have to always agree, you know, but he says, as the Lubbock Police Department, we're here to listen. That's our job. Community policing starts with listening. And another thing Jafar says, I don't want my community to be over-policed. And that right there is really the brunt of his concern and a lot of concerns for a lot of younger people in the East Lubbock community. They feel like with this new increased enforcement, targeted enforcement, that they're being over-policed.
Yeah.
And he made it well known that something's got to change. There's got to be something better. But the point about he invited over 20 young men to come to the meeting, let their voices be heard, and for whatever reason, they decided they didn't want to be there. They didn't want to be close to the building.
Yeah.
It says a lot right there.
Yeah, that was very telling. And there was another moment a couple minutes later after Jafar initially spoke up where things got pretty tense when an officer tried to address complaints of harassment. I'll play that clip and just note that I've edited it down for time. I'll put the full conversation online at radio.kttz.org. Okay, let's listen to that.
I'd like to say something. I keep seeing posts and hearing stuff about harassment, and I look at it as enforcement. You guys can't have it both ways, but sometimes it feels like that. We feel like you guys think that we're harassing you, and that's not what we're trying to do. We're over in the community trying to get the gun violence to stop.
So that's essentially what we're trying to do. Is it's either harassment or nothing.
That's not good for somebody like me.
That's not what he's saying.
Hold on, please. Respectfully. What we can't have happen is you mince his words. It may not be you that pulls me over. It may be him. And clearly he has a problem with what we're saying in here. As far as, yes, we do feel harassed. And there's other options on the table besides stop and frisk everyone.
So what are your thoughts on that interaction?
That was another part, Casey, where once again, the dynamic in the room shifted.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe the officer's name is Officer Sullivan. He says you can't have it both ways. And that's where, once again, a lot of the younger people in the room say, hold on, wait a minute. And they took offense to it because what they're saying is that, well, we're not saying we don't want you to be over here, but at the same time, we wish that you would change the way you're policing us as well. And that officer did later on apologize and say, I'm sorry, those are probably not the best words. But it became this topic of harassment. But when he said, you can't have it both ways, that's something we're not only are we hearing in Lubbock, we're hearing that sentiment all over the country. And something Jafar says, and he asks, is it harassment or nothing?
Yeah.
And that was the big question is, yeah, we want you to be over here. We want you to keep us safe, but we don't want to be harassed.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, knowing that community, I've done tons of stories within that community and people there. That is a tight community. They're usually all on the same page about everything. They're all about making sure that, you know, our community is respected, that we take care of it, that we're not going to let anybody else come into our community and turn it into something else.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing this disconnect, this divide, and it sounds very generational, it looks very generational, is very interesting for East Lubbock. And so that was such a big moment for that discussion because it just seemed it went a whole nother route.
Absolutely. Even when you hear the police officer trying to explain himself further on harassment versus enforcement, you can kind of hear the older members of the community chiming in his defense.
Yep.
While the younger members are upset by what he said. And so it is a very interesting dynamic that emerged.
Yeah.
One thing that I do want to reiterate here is that we're not trying to villainize the police officers patrolling the neighborhood here.
Yeah.
Their actions are driven by data, like we said before. And according to the numbers, their methods are working.
Yeah, and that's something that Assistant Chief Marin said, using that number of 42 to 4.
Yeah.
It's working.
I'm going to pause you right there, Matt, and bring Andy Wilkinson into this discussion. As we're talking about the increased surveillance of the Parkway neighborhood, which is a neighborhood in East Lubbock, and the community's response, I think it's easy to point to the national conversation around policing and say, this is why the meeting took this turn and tensions bubbled up. But as I mentioned at the top of the show, the relationship between the police and East Lubbock has historically been complicated. Andy, you're a historian and you've spent time as a police officer in the city. What was that relationship like when you were serving?
Well, you've already said it was complicated. So it is complicated.
The relationship between the police and any neighborhood is complicated. It doesn't matter if it's minority or majority or it's rich or poor. One of the things I found in 12 years of being in police work, at the same time I was starting to write songs and poems, was that nobody liked me. The people who were in the arts thought I was a spy, and the people who were in police work thought I was a commie pinko liberal. And so it's a very complicated relationship any way you look at it. The people that I worked with, and I worked in a neighborhood a lot, they wanted the policemen there to do what policemen are supposed to do, which is to protect and to serve. You know, that's the motto.
Mm-hmm. Now, there was an interesting event that happened that we've talked about before, where tensions really boiled over in the community. There was a school shooting at Dunbar High School in 1971. I want to read an excerpt from the West Texas Times, dated September 16th, 1971. It said, "Last week will go down in the history of Lubbock, Texas as a shocking one. The tense situation came about last Thursday afternoon in the Hub City when a young black Willie Ray Coyer, 16, was shot in the halls of Dunbar High School shortly before 2:40 p.m. He was dead on arrival at Methodist Hospital, a bullet lodged in his left chest. Murder with malice charges were filed in juvenile court against a white youth, Jeff Carl Carver." Tell me about what happened and what you remember from that incident.
Of course, none of us were there at the time of the shooting. It was afterwards. In fact, I worked a night duty, and it was a plain clothes detail. So I normally would come in street clothes, and we would do the work that we did in the evening. And I got a call that afternoon to get my uniform out and show up, you know, right away. There's a riot going on, and it's like a riot. So anyway, I got to the police station. A captain handed the keys of a paddy wagon to myself and a fellow who was a normal partner of mine. And he said, "I want you to drive down there to that school, Dunbar, and show those people, that crowd, we mean business." And of course, my partner and I looked at each other askance because we knew that was a crazy idea. If there was a problem, a paddy wagon driving around was not going to make it any better. So we started heading down 19th Street, and we hadn't gotten very far when there was a call for help from some police officers. And they were being surrounded by literally a crowd of, you know, I would say 400 or 500 people.
Wow.
And what had happened is that the policemen who were being surrounded had, for some reason, stopped a car that had a bunch of black teenagers in it. And they pulled it over, and about the time they pulled it over, this crowd of people had been marching up to head to the police station. Mm-hmm. And they saw the police car stopped, and so they just swarmed over there. And nothing had happened at that point, but the policemen were not only injudicious, they were scared. So my partner and I got out, and then the crowd started moving in, and it was a frightening thing. You spoke of complications. It was a very complicated thing. In the crowd were people that I knew from the community who were good people. In fact, the crowd as a whole, they were all good people. They were just there wanting to know what was going on and what was going to be done about this shooting. It wasn't the kind of thing that would make you frightened. But also in that crowd were people that I knew that weren't good people, and most of those were people that I had arrested before. This is the downside of lots of mass protests, regardless of who the people are doing the protesting. I distinctly remember there was one particular kid who had a very long 2x4 piece of lumber, and he would swing it at me. And somebody in the crowd would grab him and pull him back just as the board would swish in front of my face. About that time, about the third or fourth swing, a canine officer arrived, and horses and dogs are good at crowd control because a lot of people are afraid of both. So the crowd dispersed, and we went on about a very rocky evening. It was a pretty difficult few days.
How many days would you say it was?
Well, we were on alerted patrols for maybe 2 weeks.
Oh, wow. Now, going back to the initial incident that happened, which was the shooting, do you know, from what you heard and what you understand of the incident, do you know if the shooting was racially motivated?
I would just have to give an opinion, because since one a person involved was black and one was white. And integration had, like a lot of things, had reached Lubbock a little late. Mm-hmm. It was just a knee-jerk reaction to say, yes, it was racially motivated. But the two students had had, first of all, an argument, and it got to be a fight. And one said, I'm going to go home and get a gun and come back and shoot you. And the other one said, well, I'm going to go home and get my gun, too, and came back. And one of them had their gun and shot the other one. So, you know, my gut feeling is that it was as much just two teenage boys getting into trouble as it was racial.
Mm-hmm. You touched on this for a second, but I want to reiterate that this did occur in 1971, which is the same year that the schools in Lubbock were forced to integrate. And so this shooting happened the following fall. This young man was arrested following the shooting. So do you know why people protested?
I think that anytime there's something of that nature at a school, particularly as a parent, you want to know what went on. Mm-hmm. And I do think that the fact that the students were of different skin colors had some impact on the community. You mentioned early on in your question, Casey, about the complicated relationship. Well, if you're black and you live in America, of course your relationship with the police is complicated. Mm-hmm. And your relationship with people who are white is complicated and has been since the first people came to this continent. So it's no wonder that people would collect to find out what was going on. The other side to that is that you have people on the authority side, the school administrators, the police, who are not any better at diffusing things. You know, it's like, oh gosh, what do we do now, crowd? Let's, you know, like that captain who was a good guy. He wasn't a mean guy, but it was like, well, we'll show them we mean business. Well, it wasn't the right way to do it. Of course, what do you do with a crowd? A crowd's a difficult thing. Crowds have no leadership until one emerges. And so if you're trying to defuse something, with whom do you speak? You know, if you get on the bullhorn and start hollering out things, that doesn't help. And the crowd that assembled, they had valid questions and valid reasons to be there. So I don't see any fault on their part on that.
And like you said, they did have valid questions. Here's another quote from the University Daily detailing the community's response. In reaction to the shooting, a group of blacks, mostly high school aged, marched to the police station. Their demands were that they be allowed to talk with officials, that murder with malice charges be filed on the suspect, and that representatives of the group be allowed to personally see the suspect being held in custody. All those demands were met by officials. Based on this coverage, there was clearly a level of mistrust in the authorities' handling of the situation, though. Going back to that recent meeting, based on some of the comments we heard, there are clearly still some issues there. So how is the Lubbock Police Department working to make that better, Matt? You mentioned the substations at the start of our conversation, and I wonder how that will play into all of this.
That's a great question, Casey. I think it's kind of one of those things that we'll have to wait and see. And it has the opportunity and the ability to be a great investment and a great venture. And to the folks who live there, it may be the exact opposite. Mm. But one thing Chief White said is that the staff that they will have at that substation over in East Lubbock, they will be dedicated to East Lubbock. Mm-hmm. You know, and so it's kind of breaking down the parts of town into like their own individual cities and villages within Lubbock. What we do know is that the substation, Patrol Division Station, is going to get a lot of support from the older members of the community. On the flip to that, how will the younger generation respond to having a police station in their backyard?
One thing that I couldn't help but notice sitting in that meeting was that there was this group of white police officers addressing a room of mostly black people.
Yep.
And one thing that kept coming up was the need for diversity on the police force. People want their police officers who are patrolling their area to look like them.
Yeah.
Which I imagine is a whole lot easier said than done. So what are some of the challenges that you've heard from the police department on this front?
I mean, it starts with recruitment. And I've done stories with Lubbock Police on this. They say it's hard to find candidates anymore. People just aren't applying to be police officers. A lot of it has to do with the climate we're in now. Lubbock Police are still graduating their classes every year, but not as much as they would like. And something Chief Mitchell has always stressed is that he wants more officers in the city of Lubbock. That's been one of his priorities from day one. And he'll do what he has to do to get more cops on the streets. But you've got to get people to be interested. People are just not applying and, or, you know, at least completing the application process or the academy like before. One thing Assistant Chief Barron mentioned is that he says, we're trying to diversify the police force. And he admitted, we need more black police officers.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, we're trying. We're trying to, you know, figure out how to recruit more black officers. But somebody pushed back in the meeting and said, you know, okay, yeah, you may get 50 black officers, but there's no guarantee that we'll see them in our community. But, you know, you at least hear Lubbock police admitting that we need more diversity in this force.
Yeah.
They want their police force to look like the city they serve. And at this moment in time, it's not looking that way.
Yeah.
Part of it, and one thing that was big, is that the people in that room would have loved to have seen the chief of police in that meeting. One thing is because our chief of police is a black man. And a lot of people I spoke to say, you would think that the chief of police would want to be at a meeting with a community that he identifies with as a black man. And in Chief Mitchell's defense, he was at a city council meeting. And we know how that works.
Yes.
City council can go long. And I believe Chief White said that he's, as soon as he can get out, he's going to make his way. He's going to rush here and get here as fast as he can because he wanted to be there.
Mm-hmm.
But not having Chief Mitchell there spoke some volumes to people. But we do know Chief Mitchell has said that he is committed to the East Lubbock community and do whatever he can do to make sure that community is safe. And, of course, that community policing works effectively there.
Absolutely. Before I close out, is there anything else that you wanted to add?
One thing they did say at the end of the meeting is that they want to do this again.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a one-time thing. And it's no promise that these meetings won't be testy, that people won't get a little heated. But, as we said, it starts with listening to the community. And as a journalist, as we're observing these, we want the best for our communities, and we hope these discussions continue.
Yes.
Because they may be tough to have, but they need to be had.
Absolutely. You're 100% right. We're out of time. You can find the full conversation with the Lubbock police officers from that community meeting, along with some of Matt's coverage and links to articles from that 1971 Dunbar High School shooting at radio.kttz.org. I'd like to thank my guests for joining me to talk about this very important topic, Matt Stell, KLBK's evening anchor, and historian Andy Wilkinson. For the Texas Tech Public Media Newsroom, I'm Casey Ellingson.